You're listening to the Script Lab Podcast. I'm Shani Edwards. I am so excited to share this interview with Christy Wilson Carnes, who co-wrote the epic World War I film 1917 with the legendary Sam Mendes. The film is simply extraordinary. One element I wasn't expecting is there are no cutaways. The movie happens in real time, making use of long extended shots. It's one of the most intimate films I've ever seen, and it feels like you're experiencing the action along with the actors. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. In this episode, Christy talks about the technical challenge of writing this kind of script, being a young woman tackling a war film, and being on the set in the mud and the cold and realizing her duty to history. She has a thick Scottish brogue, which I found to be utterly charming. Hope you do too. Take a listen.
Blake, pick a man, bring your kit.
I hoped today might be a good day. Hope is a dangerous thing.
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion?
Yes, sir.
They're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you fail, it will be a massacre.
Let's talk about this for a minute.
Why?
We've got orders to cross here.
That is the German front line.
Hold back!
If we're not clever about this, no one will get to your brother. I will.
Christy.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going good. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Thank you.
1917 blew my mind.
That's so kind of you. Thank you so much. That's like so nice to hear.
Before we get to that, though, I'm wondering if we can go back a little bit and talk about how it is that you came to be a screenwriter.
Sure.
Working on the amazing show, Penny Dreadful.
Oh, with John Logan. What a treat, yeah. Like, that's my first job. I mean, that's something. Well, I mean, to go way back, I had no idea I wanted to be a screenwriter. They used to shoot this Scottish TV show called Taggart near where my family lived, and I would just turn up on their sets and be like I was 15, I was like, can I watch? And they would just let me, and I turned up every day of the summer holidays. And then I started kind of like being attached to departments, and I was like almost a runner, like a PA, but like the worst PA, because I couldn't make coffee, I couldn't drive, like I was basically just a health and safety risk is how I would now be defined on set. But I'd spent almost all my summer holidays over like 3 years going out onto film sets, and I just loved it. And I was meant to go and study physics because I'm a big nerd, and I remember kind of saying to my mum, like, hey, how would you feel if I didn't go to university to study physics and I just worked on film sets? And she was like, oh, follow your bliss, kid, which is like pretty good as mothers go. So I started doing that, and then her one condition for not going to university with physics was to go and get a degree in filmmaking. So I went to the Royal Scottish Academy, or the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland it's now called, and I did my degree in filmmaking, and I had a teacher called Richard Smith who, I remember the first lesson he gave us, he was like, okay, go away this weekend and just write something interesting, can be anything. It just has to have a beginning, a middle, and end. And I wrote this weird thing about two guinea pigs watching a man fall down the stairs. Like, it was so strange, because I was like, I loved the idea of it, but I never thought I could be a writer. So I was like, I'm just going to have fun with this. And I gave it to him on the Monday, and he's like, okay, you can do this every week. I want 10 ideas. And that man, that genius of a teacher, is the reason I have a career as a screenwriter. And I had a year with him. I wrote like a whole bunch of short films, and then he pushed me to like keep at it, and I went to the National Film School and I did my master's just in screenwriting, and then I graduated and I worked in a bar and I wrote Ether, which went on the blacklist, and then that got me the job in Penny Dreadful. John Logan read that. It was quite funny, we had, and I'm sorry in advance for the accent, we had we had a phone call, John Logan and I was talking about how much I loved the first season of Penny Dreadful, because that was the only one that was out at present, and I was like a massive fan of the romantic poets and everything like that. And I was going on and on and on, and then about 3 months later when we were on set, he's like, I couldn't understand a word you said in that call. And I was like, why did you hire me? And he's like, well, I really liked your script, Ether. And I thought, well, she can talk, but she can write. So that, like, you know, stood me in good stead. So I started on Penny Dreadful. And about the same time as I took Penny Dreadful, I took a commission for Darren Aronofsky adapting Charles Graber's book, The Good Nurse, into a film for Protozoa Pictures.
Love Darren.
He's, oh my God, what a genius. And actually everyone that was involved in that was like my first like proper job in film. And it was, they were so kind and gentle and like, let me really try something with that film. Like, let me make it a female lead. Let me like kind of push the boundaries. Let me make it creepier and more like Silence of the Lambs in a hospital at night, and let it all take place over 3 months instead of almost 12 years. So they gave me so much freedom for that script. And Sam Mendes read that script and hired me to do the Voyeurs Motel on the basis of that. So really, Penny Dreadful and The Good Nurse are like the kind of building blocks for where I end up now.
Will we be able to see The Good Nurse?
I hope so. I hear, you know what it's like. I hear, like, they're always going to shoot it next year. They're always going to shoot it next year. Last I was kind of in the circle, it had an amazing cast attached, an incredible director, Tobias Lindholm, who's worked on Mindhunter, and obviously his incredible, like, Danish work. It's one of my favourite scripts that I've ever written, even though, you know how sometimes you write scripts and then you go back to them after 2 years and you're like, oh my God, I'm an idiot. Oh God, I'm such a hack. And you're just like, oh God. But I go back to that one and I'm still like, oh, this deserves to be made. It's all about the American healthcare system. I feel like it's so present, even from 5 years ago when I wrote it, it's still incredibly potent now.
Unfortunately.
Tragically. With any luck, it'll come together. I'd love to see it on screen. I also think it's based on real people, especially this woman who actually caught the serial killer that it's all about. And she's a real person. And I would love for her to see her life on screen, because she's just incredible. She's an amazing human being who like risked everything to save people she doesn't know. And I just think she deserves recognition.
Wow.
Yeah, that was like, what a script to get as like your first one out of the gate. Like, I'm so lucky. And Charles Graber, the author of the book, was so open and giving. He did challenge me to a drinking contest, which I had to win to get the information, and I barely won it. Like, I scraped by.
What did you drink?
Oh, a lot of whiskey in New York. I can't remember everything that happened that night. We were in Brooklyn. I can't remember, but I remember being in a rib place, and I thought we were outdoors. I was like, I love these outdoor ribs, and he's like, we're inside. I was, yeah. But, you know, I suffer from my art. I should also say I hardly drink now as well, so please no one else challenge me to a drinking contest. I'm like one wine and I'm dead.
Well done. I'm very, very impressed. So 1917,
yes.
It takes place at the end of the war, yes, World War I.
Yes, towards the end of the First World War.
So to be clear, the movie is not shot in one take, but it feels
it's 100% shot in one take. No, I don't know if I'm allowed to. As you know, it was a 65-day shoot, so it couldn't have physically been shot in one take. But the whole point, I mean, from the first phone call I had with Sam, was that it was to feel like real time, like one take. And in the script, I never once wanted to deviate from that. I never in my mind wanted to be like, oh, well, you know, we can move, this will be a different setup, or this will be a different day. So from the very kind of like, from the first time you hit interior or exterior field, it was like, I was like, nope, this runs consecutively. It has to have a beginning, a middle, end in real time. It has to feel satisfying. That was the DNA of it for me.
Well, it is incredible. It is so intense.
Yes.
And I didn't know that it was going to be the case coming into it. So
good.
And after about the first 10 minutes, I realized they're not cutting away.
Nope.
And I went, oh my God, these are these giant extended takes.
Yes.
And every little thing has to be right. And I got
high
a little
stakes.
Yes. I got a little stressed out. I'm like, yeah. Well, what if the actor is in the right place? And what if the camera guy falls over? And
hey, all of that stuff happened. I was on set every day. Partly because of the notion or the practicalities of this, there was no traditional edit. So there was every piece of dialogue, every action, it was go time on that day when we shot it. So sometimes we'd be rewriting on set. Sometimes I'd be like, actually, you know, Richard Madden comes in and storms the character and you're like, less dialogue. He's doing so much with his face. I was like, cut, 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 cut. And so, like, it was so important to be there to do all that. But yeah, no, it felt really high stakes. There was one sequence, you know, the final trench run. I'm not sure how much I can give away, but the final trench one, when one of the actors has got to run
yes.
outside the trench, the day that we shot that over 2 days, and it was kind of midpoint of the shoot, we're still in Wiltshire, and everyone was really pulled together on this set because it was like every department had to work in perfect harmony more than any other like film set I've been on. And the actor was out running and it's 500 extras pouring over the thing, and everyone was watching it in like horse boxes and like all the makeup girls, everyone Video Village, and you could hear people going go 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 under their breath, like go go go, and there's one point where he hits the extra and everyone screamed, people were like no. I remember like literally I jumped up out of my seat and I was like like that, and then he gets back up and you're like and he runs, it's like the fucking Terminator, sorry, he's like the Terminator when he runs in that one. And it was like watching the Super Bowl. It was like watching the Super Bowl with, forgive my football metaphors because I don't know them all, where your team's carrying the ball near the end and it's all for the game. It was like that. I was just like, and there was so much of that. There was so much of, the actors were just incredible. You know, Roger, his team, the sound department, all of them. Like the boom operator was like, oh my God. He had to run, but like with his hands up like that across no man's land. You know what I mean? So it was like wild to see everyone work together and feel so passionately about story, about these characters. It was that's best fun ever.
Incredible. Well, a lot of it too is, you know, the camera, so the actors are running forward,
yes,
but the camera is obviously going backwards.
Yes,
that's when I was really stressed out.
Yes, yeah,
I just thought, oh my
poor
gosh.
Pete. And also it's like a foot of mud, like, and I walked in that mud without holding a camera, and they say, oh, they got the lighter version of the Arri camera, but it was still a heavy camera. Like it was impossible to stand up sometimes. There was one time during rehearsals when we'd start building No Man's Land, which is, you know, just full of craters and sodden, I fell over and almost took George McKay out with me. He helped me off. I was like, I'm so sorry, George. It was like ridiculous. So yeah, it was endurance, but at the same time, when you're out, no one ever complained, because when you're out in a set of No Man's Land, you can't help but think 100 years ago, there was boys, I mean, I'm talking like boys at 15, like out in there, and they were being shot at and shelled and murdered. Do you know what I mean? So it's like everyone felt, it was such a fun set to be a part of, but everyone felt such a sense of duty to tell this story, because this story was such a, George Schofield is meant to be every man. You're meant to have enough of him that you can really understand his character, but he's meant to also be a coda so that you can feel like that could have been your grandfather. Because in some people's cases, that was your grandfather. And so there was like the burden of being right for history and also like trying to get through a set that's like inches of mud you're sliding across and trying to get, I mean, sometimes frankly impossible shots off. And they did, because they're masters.
Impossible is the right word, because at one point you're following, and then yep, he jumps into a river,
yes,
and suddenly you're there with, yep, him in the river, and I have no idea how that happened.
We did some of that in a river, and we did some of that in a white water rafting facility, like the Olympic one in the River Tees, so because they could control how the water would move. I mean, see the level of... There was like one point I was at dinner with Sam and Roger and Dennis Gassner, and I first of all, I was at this dinner and I was like, I'm the only one here without an Oscar. This is insane. Like, it's nuts, right? Because you're just like, where the fuck am I here? How did I get here? How did this happen? But listening to them talk, they're all the A-team. They're geniuses. Like, legit geniuses. And it was amazing to be in that room. And also for them to listen to me as a young woman was like wild. Do you know what I mean? Like, every single one of them felt like my opinion wasn't discounted in any way, shape, or form, because I'm not what you traditionally have write a war movie. And so, like, it was a labor of love. It was a collaboration. It was, I mean, I remember as a writer, I don't spend a lot of time outdoors, right? Or, like, not in my pajamas, because that's how I love to write. and I remember the first day on set being like, this is awful. Like, I'm outside, it's cold, because it was February in London, in Bovingdon, and you were outside London. I was like, all these people are here, which is so much work. And then, like, by the end of the shoot, I was like, these people are my family. I love them forever. I'm going to get their names tattooed on my face.
Oh.
No, I didn't actually. I didn't, I promise. But, like, just that idea of, that's how collaborative it was. Everyone worked together, and it was beautiful.
Yes, you are not the person I would think of for writing a war film. But you know what? I am so excited that you did.
Thank you. Me too.
Because you had an interest in the world wars, didn't
you? I do. Yeah, I was a massive well on World War II war buff. I had a great history teacher at school. And my grandparents loved movies. They loved cinema. They came from like a pretty poor part of Glasgow in Scotland where, you know, not them, but a lot of people like couldn't read. A lot of people, you know, talking in like the late, early 20s when they grew up, and like cinema, they used to call it kinema. That was like the method of information. That was something really special to them. Like, and they kind of passed that on to my mum and I, and cinema, movies were such a huge part of my life growing up because it rains a lot in Glasgow. You've got to spend time indoors. But it was also like respect for a medium to deliver information, to deliver emotion. So I grew up loving war movies because I sat and watched them with them. I mean, I remember like watching like The Dirty Dozen or The Great Escape with my grandpa and him being like, as if he was Steve McQueen, like, can I get that bike over? And it's like, there's something so pure about a guy in his, who would have been what, in his 60s or 70s then, like feeling like the character on screen. And so that's been my like goal in life, is to try and create worlds where you see yourself or you want to be that person. And so I love cinema. I loved war movies, and I'd read a lot. I've seen a lot of war documentaries because my grandparents also loved that. It was like another version of cinema. It didn't have to be movies. It didn't have to be entertainment. They were like, no, go and learn. And so I really, really fascinated by war, because it's human beings pushed to their absolute extreme. It's everything in extremis. And also, people often think war is just the dominion of men, but I mean, in World War One and Two, women played huge roles at the home front, but also on the front line, and also the civilians that were swept up in it. And so it's a mistaken notion to think that it's a man's game. And also, it reduces men. They think all men are the same and they just all want a testosterone-filled punch fest. No. All the men I know are not like that. And so the idea that there's men and women's stories seems ridiculous to me. And I feel like there is change in the air. I feel like there has been change in the air since I started writing. I feel like there's been a push to have more women write thrillers or action, and it's been great for me because I was never the rom-com person. Like, I if you made me write a rom-com, I'd be like, and then there's a gunfight. And I'm like, and she stabs the bitch. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would take it so far. And when I first kind of, like, was working, I kept getting offered kids' movies. And I was like, you know, if I write a kids' movie, it's going to have waterboarding in it. Like, like, you know, like, you've read my work. You know that that's not what I do. And so, I mean, the lovely and wonderful thing about Sam is that I don't think my gender entered into his mind. I don't think, even though it's a subversive act, hiring a woman to write a war movie, and if I may be so bold, a youngish woman at that, like, I know that's a weird thing to do, or a non-traditional thing to do, but I don't think it ever entered into his thoughts. I think we worked together well, and he liked my writing, and he knew that together we could unlock this. I'm really pleased that the world's changed and that women can enter this domain, and I think more of it. Yay!
I just am so excited and inspired by you, and I can't wait to see what else, you know, you're gonna end up writing, and
yeah.
it's just fantastic. What did you learn about writing from working with Sam?
So, I mean, I've learned a lot from working with Sam. Actually, probably my whole professional career, I've in one way or another been working for Sam Mendes, because he produced Penny Dreadful. I had two other scripts that I wrote from him that didn't go because of rights issues. And in fact, when he phoned me up about 1917, he told to me, third time's the charm. It was the very first thing he sort of said to me about it. I've had such a long haul with him. And he, I don't want to blow smoke up his ass, but he is a visionary. He understands, because of his theatre background, because of his, I mean, illustrious film background. I mean, the stuff he's made is stunning.
American Beauty.
Oh my God, American Beauty.
Skyfall.
Road to Perdition. Do you know what I mean? Like, these films are so unbelievably, incredibly crafted character pieces. And some of that is the writers, of course. A lot of it's the writers. But a lot of it's Sam understanding how to unlock an actor and how to motivate someone. And so, I mean, I suppose... maybe learn everything from him, not to give him too much credit. But with particular to 1917, it was a massive learning curve because it's a completely different way of writing a script.
Right.
It doesn't... There's no... Well, first of all, he said to me in that phone call, third time's a charm, he's like, he ended with, oh, by the way, it's all going to be one shot. And I was like, what the... And he'd hung up, and I was like, ah! And I was like, I turned up his house on the Tuesday, and he was like, one shot? And he's like, yeah. He's like, okay. I was like, right. And he's like, because it'll be the most immersive way of telling a story. And I was like, I got you. Okay, I understand completely. Like, it's not about, hey, I've got the bravado and the skill to make one shot. It's about, this is the best way to tell this character's journey. And he was right. But I remember being like, okay, one shot, and then Googling one shot scripts. Because I was like, how is that even going to look? I was like, how's that even going to, like, do you know what I mean? What does that even look like on the page? And I couldn't find one. I was like looking at Rope and stuff like that. But the scripts are like, you know, they're not a blueprint. Well, they're a blueprint for the film. Whereas, and all scripts should be a blueprint. So I believe all scripts should be really visual. I want, when, more than anything, I want when someone reads my script for them to see a movie playing in their head. That's like, that's my dream. That's my goal every time I sit down to write. But with this, with 1917, it wasn't about creating a blueprint. It wasn't about creating a map. It was about creating the destination. It had to be the final movie because it was a proof of concept that a real-time movie would work, that it'd be satisfying, that it'd be believable, that you as an audience would care enough to stick with it and you wouldn't feel overwhelmed or like kind of bombarded. So it was really a real fine line. And what I had to do was with every sentence, every word was a prisoner, every single one. And you know, you start traditional script, interior, exterior, location, time of day. And with this, I was like, oh, I'm going to get one header.
Wow.
We ended up putting all our headers in, but just for the change of location. Right. Everything was continuous.
Wow.
And so, and then you traditionally, you go, okay, this is the room we're sitting in. I describe this and these are the characters and a little bit in there just to get the audience to hook them in and then the dialogue. But with this, you had to describe every frame of the film. So the opening of 1917 is exterior meadow and long wildflowers are swaying in the long grass. There's thunder and no lightning. That's it. And then there's a man lying on the ground and then you pull back. So you're essentially taking the audience through the movement of that camera. And partly I was able to do that because Sam knew how he wanted the camera to move. Like instinctively he knew the moments like this. And of course there was so much kind of like, we rewrote the script so many times on set, never structurally, but we would rewrite moments, the emotional arcs of the scenes and everything that would be tweaked because everything had to work in symphony. It had to be a choreographed kind of harmony. But the script was so different from anything I've ever written because it had to be frame by frame of the film. And whenever I would write and get lazy, because I love to write in long stretches. Like I'll sit down at like, I say 8 in the morning, but it's 10 because I'm lazy. At 10 in the morning, and time will disappear from me. I will literally stop writing, and I'll be like, "Oh, Jesus, it's 5 o'clock, and I've not walked my dog." Do you know what I mean? I'm like, "Cooper, sorry, you can go and pee." So it's like, with that, and I'm so used to doing that because I love you get in quite a meditative way. I really enjoy it. As I would go on in the day, and I realized as I got tired, I would revert to the old way where you instinctively describe a cut to a close-up without saying cut to close-up, but you would say something like there a tear forms in his eye, and you instinctively know as a reader that that's close. And so I have to go back every morning with a fine tooth comb and be like, no, that feels like I'm describing a jerky camera move when everything had to be fluid. I had to be a serpent throughout. So it was really tricky. It was so much work. And the technical achievement of the film is incredible, and but that started on day one. That started with the first time Sam and I sat down. You know, everything had to work together. Everything had to be it had to be like a 10 technically all the way through, which was stressful.
Wow, well done.
Thank you.
Advice. What advice do you have to a writer who's got a few spec scripts?
Yep.
Maybe a pilot. What would you recommend?
I think, so like the big thing I would say is keep writing and keep rewriting. The other big thing I would say is show everyone your work. Don't ever be afraid that someone's going to steal your idea. Because you know what? See, if someone steals your idea, you had a great idea and they'll come back to you for another idea and that time make them pay. but the biggest thing I ever really, the one thing I say to myself before I go into every room is listen to what this person is saying to you. Because people tell you what they want. Or people tell you what they don't want. which is as useful. So see, when you're in meetings, when you're talking to executives, when you're talking to producers, like, don't talk at them, don't give a 15-minute pitch, make it a conversation. Because nothing that you do should be rooted, nothing that we do is final. We're not, scripts are not the end product. Everything should be collaborative. And I think, see, if you don't want to collaborate, you're in the wrong industry, go write books. Do you know what I mean? This is the most important thing in our, as a screenwriter, is to be fluid and to be open and to listen to everyone. So that's my big bit of advice.
Great, Christy. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Reverend. It's such a pleasure.
I wish you nothing but the best of luck.
Thank you.
With 1917. And again, I can't wait to see any of your next projects.
Oh, lovely. Well, it's Last Night in Soho, Edgar Wright's movie. It's out 25th of September next year.
Great.
So yeah, that's the only
one. Maybe we can talk after that.
I would love that. That'd be so much fun. I'll talk to you anytime you want.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.